Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good evening. This is Achtung Millwall, your weekly digest of all things Lions. My name's Aaron Paul, guiding you through the next, well, we don't know how long it's going to be. It's going to be fairly lengthy as we look back at a decent trip to Birmingham. That was Scouse / Birmingham. I don't know what that was all about. But yeah, a big win for the Lions in the hunt for survival with some okay-ish results elsewhere. Joining me this evening, of course, the empresario of all things Millwall, Mr. Nick Hart.
Evening, listeners. Welcome to a slightly more upbeat Millwall show. Suddenly upbeat after a week of misery.
Yeah, in downtown Chernobyl for us is our Siberian correspondent, Harry Warren, or Harold Warren. Are you there?
I am still here. I have not been taken out by the Love Sport Twitterati. I've not been done.
Cinque. And over somewhere on the on around Kent somewhere is young Mickey Avery, still scanning for them club shop bargains.
Evening. After I'm actually in a tattoo parlour now, getting the picture of Ben Thompson with that scarf on from the previous club shop tattooed across my back.
Oh, lovely.
After last night.
Lovely. Is that the joined up one?
That's the joined up one, exactly. Yeah. You've got it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's always, if he ever fancies a 10-inch Zampa, tell him to come my way, Ben Thompson. He was on to a hat-trick yesterday as Millwall beat Birmingham by 2-0. Both goals scored inside 32 minutes. So the job was pretty much done before half-time. And I'll tell you something. Again, I was fortunate enough to be at the game, and the atmosphere in the city of Birmingham after the second City derby on Sunday, where you had those scenes of, you know, a fan attacking Jack Grealish and a steward attacking Jack Grealish as well. The atmosphere in the city was absolutely horrendous. Just very, very flat. It was just very strange, very, very quiet. There wasn't really much about it. And I'll tell you something, a few of us in the press box were sitting there thinking, if Millwall don't take something from this, then you know, they might as well quit for the rest of the season, because they needed to go and get something. And this was an opponent that was on the ground. It was like a weak gazelle, you know, and the Lions and Ben Thompson strode through and picked him up.
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere came over very flat. I was watching it on iFollow on the iPad, and you're right, Aaron. I mean, it did look like there's a sense of emptiness. The Millwall fans came over very well, from what I could hear on the TV coverage. But what a performance by the Lions. I mean, okay, Birmingham on the back foot, and Birmingham have had their problems at the weekend, but we've still got to go there and get something. And I thought, initially, at least in the start of the first half, I wonder whether we would get anything, because Birmingham pressed forwards, and although they weren't openly dangerous in front of goal, they were going, the ball was popping in and around our penalty area. So I think to survive that and then the kind of classic Mill counter punches that we were hoping for was a major result for us in the circumstances.
Yeah, the counter attacks were absolutely brilliant. I mean, looking at the lineups for the game, just very quickly for the Hose, they made four changes. They brought in Mahoney, they brought in Gary Gardner, brother of Craig. They brought in Murbati, who's a winger, and Isaac Vassell as well, with Che Adams, who's a really, really top player up top. Jukovic has dropped to the bench, so was Diogo Jota, David Davis as well. I think they missed Jota and Jukovic as well. They missed that outlet, and I think them playing would have added something different. Plus, Craig Gardner, he's a good quality midfielder at this level. And I think Gary Monk, you know, was looking at potentially some tired legs in the camp after, you know, what was a really all-action derby on Sunday. And I think he made a big, big mistake. Obviously, the big news for Millwall was that Jordan Archer had been dropped. Just get your views on that first and foremost.
Well,
Hallelujah. Is that Father Patrick I can hear coming in? Yes.
Divine messages.
Yeah, you beat me to that one there.
He's fucking awful. I mean, the bloke's confidence is shot. I think for the last season, ever since that Fulham game, I don't think he's had the support from the Millwall crowd, really. He wasn't very good last season. He cost us at least 10 points. And this season, I mean, I said with the game against Norwich, I think he could have done better with the two goals. And obviously Neil Harris agreed with us because he's dropped him. He never makes any crucial saves. How many goalkeepers make crucial saves to keep you in games where you don't deserve to? And he never does that. So, you know, I was surprised it was Martin that he brought in, but then I suppose there's no one else there. So
Martin made, I mean, it's an interesting point, Eric, because Martin did make some crucial saves. I'm just thinking back to last night, there was one where Birmingham that were breaking on the right into the penalty area, and he's kind of spread himself, made a great tackle.
Hello, I think to a point on what we were saying about Jordan Archer getting dropped. Where are you, Harry?
I was in an undisclosed location somewhere on the east side of London.
That's the guy who can't have just been absolutely...
That's the radiation alarm.
That's someone not doing their job properly in their radiation cell. I do apologise. It's not mine. It's somebody else's.
That's what it is. No, but we touched on Archer like being dropped, and he was obviously one of the big names there. But, I mean, I'm looking back at the bench now. You've got Archer dropped, Meredith, Hutchinson, Williams, Elliot, Morrison, O'Brien. Yeah. These were players, possibly take out Tom Elliott, who last season were first choice players and arguably player of the season contenders. I think that that bench, as I said yesterday, gents, was a statement to the fans to a degree, when Neil Harris was probably saying, look, I'm listening to what you're saying. You're asking me to drop these players and I'm dropping them, you know, and I'm giving someone else a chance. The fact that Amos was completely out of side altogether,
yeah,
I think that shows that he's finished now at the club, if honest, in my opinion.
I think Neil had to make changes. I mean, obviously the performance up at Bolton, I went up there for it. And
we can only describe this as we're having a Millwall West of performance at the moment. I think what I'm doing is working well, but everything everyone else is doing seems to be having major malfunctions over there. So I apologise for the background noise.
The performance of Bolton was worse than that poor man stuck in the radiation cell with Harry there. I mean, it was that bad, and the reaction of the crowd up there was toxic, and it was horrible to be there, to be absolutely honest, because as I said on the other podcast, it's Neil Harris, and you know, whatever his limitations as a manager may or may not be, he occupies a very special place in the club's pantheon, and when you've got the kind of beginnings of you know, the abuse that come towards the end of any managerial career, but directed against Neil, it's really not very pleasant to be listening to.
Truth be told, Nate, if you know, you we're going to sort of look at this goalkeeping situation sort of in depth, if you like. Going back to the Everton game, the mistake that was made there, every time a ball was fired in, any form of shot, be it tame or a rocket, you were worried with Archer. You're so concerned with him. And the same was for Norwich. Every time I was sort of like wincing every time a ball went in, because I was just like, this geezer is gonna let it through his legs. He's just, something's not quite right. And I was shocked when I saw David Martin, starting yesterday. And obviously, I asked you guys when the last time he played. It was December 2017 against Aston Villa, and he kept a clean sheet that day in the Midlands. He kept a clean sheet yesterday.
Yeah, we should have won that day as well.
Yeah,
his performance initially, I'll be straight, was very, very. He looked rusty. He looked keen but rusty in the sense of. He was going out. He was trying to make the big clearances. He was trying to, you know, go for sort of the big leaps and punching away corners and balls pushed into the box. And he looks suspect a few times. And there are a couple of moments which were a little bit hairy for Martin. But you know, at the end, he made two or three really cracking saves. And even though he is an ex-franchisee, I take my hat off to him and I say, you know, fair play to him. And I think the experience as well, he's 36, he's not exactly young. Another experience, had someone who can potentially help marshal that back line alongside Alex Pearce, who was absolutely brilliant yesterday.
Yeah, Pearce is one to name check. But just going back to Martin for a moment, I mean, we've only seen him a few times, and Villa was one such occasion. I think he played in Rochdale in the league, in the cup last season. I wouldn't say he's the best goalkeeper that I've seen at the Den. He's probably just doing basic goalkeeping. I mean, that's what we've not seen from Jordan Archer for so long. When he first arrived, Jordan Archer, he was quite a prospect, wasn't he? He was seen as something of a jewel that we've turned up from Tottenham's lower teams.
But, I think you summed up in your pod after the Bolton game, Nick, when you said that Jordan Archer isn't the player who's got the potential anymore. He's not that young player who's got the potential, to correct myself. You know, he's getting on a bit now. He's into the prime of his career. And there is an argument. I mean, we had a similar thing with David Ford, didn't we? That Ford basically lost his place because Archer was there with the potential.
Yeah.
Is Archer now still getting these games? Because the only choice is a Ben Amos who was average, I believe, at Charlton last season. Lower average. It hasn't done anything for us of any real, point of excellence. And Dave Martin, you know.
What's Tom King?
No, he's useless. I mean, that's my opinion. I think our goalkeeping is shocking, really. I mean, it needed to be addressed in the summer. I think all goalkeepers, whatever league they're in, play better when you've got someone behind you pushing you. Ford did when Archer came. He had probably got an extra season out of him and pushed him on. And Archer actually played well when he had Ford behind him. Until since then, obviously, we've had no real solid number two. We had Dave Martin, who's played sort of 90 minutes in 2 years before last night. Tom King went to Wimbledon and didn't cut the mustard. That reminds me of Fred, actually. but, you know, we... these players ain't good enough. If they're out of contract, they've got to go in the summer. You know, we mentioned last time that Harris had to be ruthless. And I think he was ruthless last night. He was ruthless. The abuse has got to him and he's gone, right, I'm doing exactly what I want to do. I can't have no, you know, he killed Darlings when he first got to the club. I remember that first summer. What did he do? It was 18 players that he let go in the summer after Holloway. So, you know, he's a ruthless man when he needs to be. I just think he's as ruthless as the Millwall crowd in that sense, you know, almost bipolar, because he's been backing his mates to a certain extent, trying to be loyal to this group of players. And, you know, I think Bolton was the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. And that was it, you know. Hopefully, going forward, you know, I want to see... I'd had for Williams. I thought Williams was a problem against Norwich. I thought he was slow. I thought he was ponderous. And I even was calling for Tunnicliffe, and that's, again, people falling off their chairs as I say that. But, you know, Thompson's your runner. Leonard's a workhorse, and so's Tunnicliffe. So it seemed to work last night. We can only hope it works going forward. But I think it all stems from the goalkeeper. You know, as you said, Aaron, he's made two saves or three saves that have kept you in the game. Or, you know, as soon as it goes 2-1, you know, Millwall would have panicked. So to keep it 2-0, keep everything level, is obviously a massive... It's psychological as much as anything else with Millwall. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Every time Millwall go 1-0 up, they expect to concede in the last 10 minutes, you know? So it's a change of fortunes in that sense, and hopefully it can continue, really.
Just on the result last night, which obviously was a welcome relief for all of us. The only thing that I was thinking in real time and afterwards. Oh, no, that was back in the radiation cell again.
We are. This is what happens.
It just reminded me of the game at Middlesbrough, the 1-1 draw up at Middlesbrough, where we went up there with a new formation. I think that was Ben Marshall's first game since he re-signed for the club, and we put in a really good performance up there, and unlucky not to win. But with similar tactics and this kind of soak up the pressure and then counter-punch, the away game approach that we actually do quite well when we're on point, like we were last night, and a few games, Middlesbrough springs to mind, and maybe one or two others. When this formation, when this kind of lineup is at the den and you've got to take it to the opposition, I just think that that's where we were slightly found out. So I think it's a great result, and let's all enjoy it, because it really did come as a welcome relief. But I think there's still another test yet to come, which is when we face our next league opponents at the Den. Who knows what we'll get out of Leeds United. We probably can soak up the pressure there and then hit them on a counter punch possibly. But I think, is it Stoke after that? And we've probably got to take the game to Stoke a little bit and get 3 points there. It's going to be an interesting next step to see how that one goes, how that works out.
No, I was just going to say what was said on last week's show, that we've got an awfully, awfully tough running. You know, in the past, sort of our the running towards the end of the season's always been reasonably generous to us. But yeah, with, you know, Stoke yet to come, Wigan away, who will be fighting for their lives as well. Leeds United away. Yes, it's an awful, awfully tough running. So we're definitely not out of the woods yet, Nick. You're right.
The great thing about last night, I thought, was, I mean, we've mentioned Alex Pearce already, but I thought he really did take control. We had a leader on the field for the first time in a long while, and it was sadly missing up at Bolton last Saturday, but it was certainly there in spades last night. And I think that's, you know, I don't want to be grasping at straws too much, but I thought that was a real shining light in what's been a very dull season otherwise, to see Alex Pearce actually organising and the kind of post-match huddle and the kind of togetherness of the squad was really, uplifting.
I think, Nick, to just pairing up with your point there, Nick, I mean, that was a massive game for Neil Harris and you know, in terms of, you know, quashing the Boo Boys, if you like. He was really, really intent on you know, responding to the criticism he's had over the past few days, and you know, he must have asked for big performances from your senior players, him, Pearce, and Lee Gregory as well, who was very, very good.
Lee Gregory
was excellent, you know, and I think Neil Harris silenced a few of the doubters there. The fans were excellent throughout, and were very, very much appreciative at the end of the effort that they saw.
That's right. I mean, just to say, I think, you know, I know that Neil, in his post-match comments, mentioned some unfair articles and some unfair stick that he's taken on in the media. And I would imagine that from the terraces too, he would have heard it. You couldn't mistake it up there at Bolton. And leaving that question to one side, I think that whatever sparked last night, it worked. And, you know, he's a proud man. And he would not have enjoyed hearing that, and in all fairness, the Mill crowd want to back Neil Harris. I know there's one or two voices out there that always say he's not the Messiah and he's naughty boy and all that kind of thing, but I think the 95% of the Mill crowd really want to get behind Neil Harris, and they want the Neil Harris that produced what we saw in that madhouse run last season. I think we do want to get behind him. It's no one's enjoying coaching Neil Harris, in my opinion. Maybe one or two, but not the majority.
I just think it's about attitude, really. I think his attitude and the players' attitude can kind of, well, maybe not Neil's attitude, but I think the attitude of the players can be called into question this season. I think that certain players have turned up expecting it to be easy this season, like they took the league by storm last year and thought it was going to be the similar kind of thing. And, you know, I raised a question last night about people saying, oh, well, Fred's come back from Wickham, he said he's unplayable, and then he hasn't played him. You know, the difference is with Thompson is Thompson's come back and proven it, and he's in his sort of 10, 15 minutes. He come on against Norwich, come on against Preston, grabbed the goal. We looked a different side with him in. He was less effective against Rotherham at home, but he still was the only player that I would have kept on the pitch. I wouldn't have taken off Thompson. I would have taken off Williams. And they're the only kind of things you can sort of questionnaire it's on for me, maybe the formation, which are things you can question any manager on. I just think that circumstances by hook or by crook to go to, you know, the away wins this season recently, you know, beating Derby, the away we could have won at Middlesbrough, probably should have won at Middlesbrough, and winning last night are proving that he does know how to change it away from home. I actually think it's the Millwall crowd, the, you know, the dreaded playing in front of people at the Den. If we're going to go and nick points away from home and we're going to get draws at home, that might be enough. That might be what we have to accept. Do you understand what I mean? And we're not the most accepting crowd, which, you know, we expect to be entertained at home, which I don't know if that actually suits us. You know what I mean? I don't think we've got the players to be that side. We've not got, you know, Jed tries to beat everyone by himself. Although I'd like to point out that Marshall last night looked a little bit more like his old self. And that's something we need to see, because if Marshall plays well, that kind of gives Jed a little bit of more freedom, because they have to worry about two players rather than just stopping Jed. And the break for the first goal is all started by Jed winning an header, which isn't something that he usually does. And Ben Thompson's pass out of defence and desire, basically his attitude and desire to get into the box. And not just to get there, to finish like that. That's what we've been missing all season. We haven't had a player that arrives into the box like that since Tim Cahill, to be fair. And he's scoring goals for fun now. And, I mean, Saville was worth $8 million, which, you know, Saville got 10 goals last season. So Thompson's, what, got three in five games or something like that? You know, that's what's been missing.
What can I just ask you a question as well? What's the Jed Wallace song that they were singing at the end?
Jed Wallace song? I don't know that one. That's a new one
Jed
on me.
Jed Wallace.
Surely they should be singing Jed Wallace.
It took ages to write that one.
No, they should be copying the Mo Salah one, going Jed Wallace, running down the wing.
We get a bit glassy eyed every time Ben Thompson turns up. You know,
He's one of our own, mate.
Exactly. He's just a bit. I mean, Ben Thompson was on that video last season when he met Tim Cahill. I think I'd be a bit like that if I met Ben Thompson. He's just, I don't know. He's just, he's a special player. When it's one of your own players, and you all know the story of, you know, his family background and the tragedy and with his brother and. You know, you just want to pick him up. He's 5 foot nothing, and you want to pick him up and put you in his pocket. He wins every header, you know, and he bleeds for the badge. And, you know, players like that in the side for Neil Harris must be a godsend, to be honest, because you don't need to wind Ben Thompson up. Just need to say you don't want to play in League One for Millwall, do you, Ben? And he'll go out and smash someone and and give the crowd a lift. You know what I mean? So, and that's sometimes all it needs, you know. And realistically, I've sort of written him off now, but if Fred had scored that goal in the last minute against, who were we playing when he
done it? Oh, Hope, wasn't it? Oh, God, who was that? Was that Rotherham?
No, it wasn't Rotherham. It was a game after Rotherham, weren't it? Like, Black. It was someone beginning with...
Have we merged into one mess, Harry? That's the trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Who's... Sheffield Wednesday.
Sheffield Wednesday. He went disco dancing.
Yeah, he went disco dancing. But if he scores that, does his career change? Does he, you know, it's the what if moments really with Fred, and Ben's what if moments seem to be paying off for him now. And Fred's still not got any chance from the bench kind of thing. But he won't have a chance this weekend either, because obviously in the FA Cup game, we've got so many players cup tied, it'll be a completely new side again.
Achtung, Millwall.
The Wonderwall Cup 2019 will be held at the Den, Bank Holiday Sunday, May the 26th, 2019. Lions legends including Jimmy Carter, Alex Ray and the star of Championship manager Cherno Samba will take on the stars of social media, including the F2 freestylers Bradley Simmons and comedian Man Like Hacks. Why not make it a family day out? £10 entry fee for adults, £6 for the under-16s and just £3 for the under-12s. The proceeds from the match will be split 50-50 between Childline and the veterans charity SAFA. Tickets are available now at www.millwalltickets.com. www.millwalltickets.com. The Wonderwall Cup, Sunday, May the 26th, 2019. See you there.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Couple other bits, gents. I don't think Millwall have seen the last of Birmingham because they are in a little bit of trouble with the EFL over sustainability and profitability rules and are waiting the outcome of a hearing which could see them be deducted 12 points.
Sustainability and what was the other one?
Profitability.
Profitability.
Yeah, that was.
Bolton should have that as well, then, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
No, but that was with Birmingham. That was to do with their transfer activity.
Well, they were under embargo and they signed a player.
Okay.
I mean, how stupid you can be, I do not actually know. But everyone is very, 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 very fearful of a points deduction, which will leave 38 points, which is one above Millwall, so they could get sucked into that. Gary Monkside, and you know, he's refusing to talk about the players. Everyone around the club is refusing to talk about the players, even though a lot of people are sort of ignorant
worried.
To the fact that, you know, not worried, ignorant to the fact that, you know, a 12-point deduction is very, very, very likely to Birmingham City, because you can't break FFP twice. I mean, you break it once you get a transfer embargo, fair enough, but if you're stupid enough to go and sign a player then you know you should be punished. So
more teams are getting pulled into this, aren't they? Into the
that's the thing. Yeah, that's
relegation battle's now massive.
Yeah, and going back to it, I think like as we were saying there, I mean, I remember there was that time sort of QPR went up a few years back, didn't they? And I think the Football League sort of done the whole rub their hands together as if say we'll wait for you to come back down because we'll slap you with a final embargo.
They got themselves a £43 million fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I would much prefer them getting a 30-point deduction. Personally, I don't think fining a club. I don't think fining a club like that makes any difference. The only place that hurts them is on the scoreboard, as you say. You know what I mean? £43 million in the grand scheme of things. You know, that's not going to...
It is because they've had to ask to pay it over 10 years. But even though they're paying back £4.3 million a year, their skin. They've got absolutely nothing.
Good.
You know, and that's simply because they're overspending.
Well, no, they should have the choice then. They should get to choose 30-point deduction or they get to choose the fine. They should have because, to be honest, surely taking one season of pain and getting relegated wouldn't have been as bad for QPR and having a new start than to pay 43 million quid, to be honest. And that's how I'd see it.
You're different. Fans, I'm sure fans would rather take a fine than a points deduction.
No one wants to drop the division, do they?
QPR, let's be honest, QPR would absolutely want League One. Let's be honest, the club of their size and their infrastructure. No, because they would. They have League One and the Championship is bigger probably in a jump than what the Premier League and the Championship are now when you look at finances.
Yeah,
League One is a very tough division this year.
This is a very tough division.
It's a tough division, but it's not tough in the sense that the financial power of the top clubs is a bit like a mini Premier League. Portsmouth spending compared to Bury must be astronomical. Do you understand what I mean? I can't see where this idea that QPR would struggle if they went down to League One. Millwall, yes, because of Millwall's size, but QPR are a bigger club in the sense of sort of catchment area and crowds, you know, which is what people look at when they look at club size, really.
I think that's possibly a reason why they actually...
My opinion, I might be chatting shit for a while, though, by the sounds of it.
Just to get relegated to have a good season in League One. I think you're always better off surviving in the Championship, personally. I mean, that's why, you know, this debate about the Cup quarter-final on Sunday versus last night's game at the Birmingham, which is the bigger game. I mean, I think you have to back the league. I know it's a boring and slightly non-Millwall attitude, but to survive in the Championship with the status and money and global kind of coverage that gets, whereas League One feels, and it, you know, ask Charlton fans, it's like being in the you're cast out, you're gone beyond the pale out there, you know, it's no place to find yourself.
That's what it is. It's a proper full blown swamp League One.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure about you, with you guys, but I always remember when we was promoted, when we won at Swindon, and then when we beat Bradford as well. You have the jubilation that you've gone up and you're back in these divisions that arguably you think you deserve to be in. But with me, it was just the relief of not being in the third tier anymore. That was more of an overpowering feeling than actually, oh, we've been promoted again. It was just, oh, we don't have to do the Johnston Paints anymore. We don't have to have, with all due respect, the sort of Carlisle Uniteds. So, like, as you were saying, Nick, you know, you want to be back up in those bigger leagues. And I completely understand what you're saying, Harry. So some teams massively, yes, of course, they do need to go down to go back up. I mean, it happened to Sheffield Wednesday a few years ago, didn't it? They sort of had that year in League One where they sort of regrouped. But That's a big ask, because
I tell you, when it struck me, the first season we came back from the playoff final last season, wasn't it? We'd come close to going in or out of the playoffs in at Twerton Park in Bristol, which is, you know, a nice enough place, but it's a very small ground. And then our first game of the new season was away at Nottingham Forest, big proper city ground stadium. You know, it was. You're up there with me, Harry, and it was just that kind of catapult from small time, not much more than park football, it felt like at Bristol, to suddenly you're in a former winner of the European Cup.
Yeah, you talked about Forest. Look at Forest down there, Southampton, all different clubs that have been down there.
Leeds United down there.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say,
yeah, I agree.
Is that if you gamble it, if you have to gamble to get in the Premier League, if you risk financial devastation, the deterrent must be harsh. The deterrent must be you will be relegated as soon as you come back down again. Because if not, in my opinion, you know, Millwall next season really should go and spend 100 million and go up. Because what's the point? Because 1 year in the Premier League, what's it worth now? 300 million, 400 million? I don't know what the TV deal's worth per year. Do you understand what I mean? It's not really a deterrent, is it, to say, well, we'll fine you 34 million, but you actually made 200 million when you were
League. It's the Bournemouth gamble, isn't it? That's basically what Bournemouth has done. For everyone who says how great a job Eddie Howe has done, and he has, you know, it's a very small club. And, you know, to get them up to the Premier League and sort of, to a degree, a Premier League side now, they spent an awful lot of money to get there. And a lot of people look past that. And I think a lot of people in the Premier League look past that, because
that's because Sky put out a documentary about Bournemouth, or Sky or NBC about plucky little Bournemouth and Jeff Mostyn.
No, that's exactly my point.
You know, and he's an incredible guy and all that. Give it to rest, right? Give it an absolute rest. You know, they're backed by a quiet Russian guy. I can't remember his name now, but they're backed by Maxim Denin, that's his name. They're backed by a quiet Russian guy who just keeps funding them with money. And in fact, there's actually an account on Twitter that I follow. Price of Football, his name is Kieran Maguire, lecturer in like sport finance. This guy breaks down like a club account and stuff. And yeah, like you look at different clubs and he talks about, you know, how they paid a £4 million fine and they try to hide it in their accounts and stuff. Clubs are doing it all the time. All the time. Yeah. And I think, you know, we look at Wolves. Wolves have been smart in the sense of they've taken all these players in the Championship on loans with options to buy. Don't get me wrong, they've spent a bit on wages, but it's George Mendes. They've managed to do it. But they still had a massive, you know, heap of cash plowed into the club, but they've done it a bit better than, say, a QPR did it or a Bournemouth did it or someone like that. And Wolves look half decent and sustainable.
I mean, I think it's one of these fundamental debates in football. You can take this. Harry's right. I mean, there are rules, and you've got to have rules that are enforced. But the tendency in big football is that the rules are enforced on the smaller clubs, and the big boys, the Manchester Cities, the Paris Saint-Germains, and the rest of them aren't subject to the same. They're superficially subject to the same rules, but not in practical terms. So, you know, it's this idea that the bigger you are, the less. The less credence you have to give to the rules that govern the small people.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, City can be backed by, was it Abu Dhabi? A very murky...
Qatari,
a very murky oil state. There's Russian money mixed up in football. There's all sorts of links to places and regimes and individuals with dirty links. But it's the great circus of the people. So at a certain point... you know, the rules are paid lip service to, but they're enforced more with the QPRs and the Millwalls would have rules enforced that wouldn't be enforced on the Cities and United. You know,
I'll pick up just with a couple of wages and I mean this guy Price of Football is really really good to look at. He's done a percentage shot of clubs spending out of their means. So, you know, wages and amortization, player amortization, yeah, over income. The lowest, the whole City with 77%. They've completely obviously stripped back their squad. Millwall are third with 90%. Burton Albion last season were 81%. The top, though, Reading, 244% of their income goes on player wages.
Wow.
How that even works. Reading, Birmingham and Wolves are the three. Cardiff in 154%, which questions the whole thing about how Neil Warnock did things on a budget, because he must have had a half-decent budget. Villa are 141%, Bristol City and Nottingham Forest both on 135%, QPR 127%. But those figures for Reading, 244%.
That's what I'm saying. They're in a relegation battle with us. Angry. They're in a relegation, yeah, battle with us, and they're that's just showing how badly run they are as a business and a club. But sort of linked into this, there's a lot of people at Millwall, as in Millwall fans, that will say, and I don't know whether Nick or Michael will back me up on this, there's a lot of Millwall fans who pretend that they wouldn't go if we got to the Premier League, because they believe it would sanitise us.
Yeah, they pretend that. I don't believe it. I think they would go.
What about you, Michael? Would you feel that you were sanitised, or would you do the 38-game season home and away?
Oh, let's be brutally honest. We can all sit there while we're full from bottom in the Championship and say we're not going to go because that's not proper war, but we'll go. Of course
we would. And you know, this idea that you wouldn't go because the Premier League is foam pans and clappers and, you know, all the half and half scarves and all that kind of stuff. Well, okay, that's what it is. It's a product. It's an immensely successful product, whether you like it or not. You know, it's a business like no other. I mean, it's almost not subject to conventional business rules. So we've got examples like Alex just quoted of teams that can, you know, throw out the kind of rule book and normal good practice in how you run a business. That football exists in its own strange world. But the idea that you wouldn't go when you've achieved the top level in the sport that you follow because somehow it's sanitised, whatever that might mean, I'm never too sure what that means. It's the idea that you can't fight on the terraces and kill people cunts to their face for offence or something.
To be honest, I much prefer to call people cunts to their face than behind their back, to be honest. I'm very much one of those type of people. No, the only thing I'd say is that obviously I'd still go. I mean, I'm not old enough to have been in the old First Division. But I would like to point out that the football tourists that we get at the moment do rock up at the Den when Millwall play the glamorous tie of sort of Blackburn on a Tuesday night, and the people with their Barcelona scarves or their Rayo Vallecano. They're always a weird, you know, a very weird team, you know, St. Pauli or someone from Germany. Very strange team shirts, and then they turn up and they seem to be the old Anglo-Saxon comes out behind them, and they seem to be taken aback that it matters to people. So I'd much prefer my one man than a dog in block 45, but, where I can pick four seats. But I understand that doesn't really work as a business for Millwall. But I think that's all linked into it as well. And obviously, you know, now, funny enough, as you said, you were watching it on the iFollow last night. That must be massive for clubs that people aren't turning up now on a Tuesday and Wednesday night. It must be huge.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, not once upon a time I would have taken up Aaron's offer of a lift up to Birmingham. Now I can do stuff, sit at home, log on, just at, you know, half past seven, log on, and there's the game. You can follow it, and it's, I know it's not the same thing, but that's the modern world for you, isn't it? It's the way it's going. It's not going to change. That's going to be. There will come a point where Saturday afternoon is no longer sacrosanct. You just know it will work. Oh, that
don't say that.
Well, I mean, I don't want that because I've been brought up with it. But, you know, normality is only ever what you're brought up with. And for kids now, I think that they see the world in different ways. I mean,
wasn't there a League Two game? Sorry, go on, Aaron.
No, I just wanted to pick up on the iFollow point because I remember reading that, you know, this fella's account and he had a piece in the iFollow. And ELTV and sponsorship income up allowing to increase distribution to club by £22 million. And it just shows that iFollow is really a bit crap, to be fair, because if you divide it all up by the amount of clubs on there, it's pretty much nothing. Very quickly, EFL
can show another company.
That would be a great idea.
They should sell it out to another proper distribution company. You can package it better. Yeah. Have actual replays, have commentators on all the games, you know, actually style it on a Sky-esque product for a Tuesday and Wednesday night. It'd actually work a hell of a lot better. Yes, people would pay for it because, you know, we're talking about, obviously, last season we went to Leeds and they got, I think they got into trouble with the EFL for paying, for making us pay more for ticket prices. I think train tickets are what, £130 to go to Leeds? So you're looking for £40 a ticket, and then you wonder why people aren't turning up to games. So you know, you got to have a little bit of, whereas what's iFollow, I'm up £7 or £5 up, something like that, you know.
Seven last night, it was a tenner. Pretty good coverage, incidentally, last night, and it was proper coverage. It was HD level, they had replays and two commentators, so it was like watching a proper game. I mean, some of the early ones, so it's just like one camera and a halfway line with no comment and no nothing. It was just like, you know, you can watch it, but it's not an enjoyable experience. So I think the global market will always be for the top flight, the Premier League. That's a monster in its own right, and Championship football will always, I mean, pay-per-view Championship football, I follow, will always be playing catchy up, but it's a good service. It saved me a long trip up to Birmingham last night, and we got a good win, so it was worth watching last night. I enjoyed it.
Wasn't there a Saturday 3 o'clock game a while ago?
Yeah, there was.
Wasn't it like Notts County or someone like that?
It was a cup day. I think it was like a rearranged league fixture on a fourth round day or something like that. For some reason, the wording of the contract with iFollow, whatever company that is, didn't cover that. So they were allowed to, they showed that. And there was a hoo-ha about it because obviously it breached the sacrosanct 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon principle. But the contract didn't cover that particular situation of a rearranged league game on Saturday afternoon. So they got round it by some ruse, some legal wording, you know.
Beginning of the end.
Of course, going back to it. It's not the beginning of the end, though. Like, this. Let's be honest, the clubs, you know, it should be 20s plenty campaign, should be across all divisions. It should have been ruled out by the Football League by now, and it should be kids shouldn't have to pay more than a fiver if they're under 16. And that's simply it, really. For me, I don't understand why it isn't. If they're saying they don't make their money out of match day tickets, then it doesn't matter if you make the tickets less money then, does it? That's my opinion of it.
It's an interesting point. I mean, it might be going off topic a little bit, but I saw something on Twitter. I think it might have been Del Strain put on there about how many more years of support he's got left in him. He must be in his 50s, same kind of age as me, to be honest. And he's posting about Mill getting back into the top flight. He said, I've only got another 10 to 15 years of like proper support in the sense of going home and away and, you know, the full kind of devotional ritual of football support. At a certain point, it becomes impractical for, you know, elderly people to travel the length and breadth of the country. And I thought, Jesus Christ, that's right. You've only got like another 10 to 15 years to go. And you look around the Millwall crowd, and there's a lot of men of what I would call my era, and slightly younger. But it's we've got to find a more youthful market from somewhere. So although it's easy to, the point of what I'm rambling here is that we've got to look at the way the modern world is. And although kids nowadays they see football support in very different ways to how it was when I was, you know, in my formative 70s years.
Achtung, Mehlball. Gents, Chris Hughton was in attendance at St Andrews yesterday. I spotted him at half time. Myself and the actual Millwall commentator, Carl Bates, who does a BBC London, spotted Chris Hughton having a lovely cheese board. I think he was with his right hand man, Chris or Chrissy. I don't know. Is it Chrissy Hughton or Chris? Everyone seems to call him Chrissy these days. But yeah, he seems like he was running the rule over.
Still be called a cunt on there. It's going to be called a cunt on Sunday, so I don't think it'll matter what you call him there. I don't know. He'll probably have a look at us. We know what to expect with Brighton, probably, and they know what to expect with us. Could Youri Scalak come off the bench and cause an upset by scoring against his former club? If he's going to rekindle his Millwall career, I think that's the only chance of it.
It'd be nice to see him do something, Harry, wouldn't it? You know,
it was his birthday this week.
He's been ill, to be fair. I think he has had a proper bad illness. He was hospitalised for a large period, and I don't know whether or not that has obviously with the return of Ben Marshall and probably not really in a great mental place, if I'm being totally honest. Whereas, you know, I want to see all the Mill signings succeed, but he's been a very almost Ian Holloway-esque signing, and I don't say that lightly, but a kind of big expectation, little reward, and that's probably Ian Holloway's career, isn't it? Big expectation, little reward. I think Brighton are probably the toughest team that we've played in the Cup for a while, to be honest, because they're similar to us. They normally play 4-4-2. They play to a big man up front and have wingers that come off him. You know, Murray's going to give Cooper or going to be in a good old battle with Cooper. And does anyone know whether or not they approve VAR for the Den? Because I heard they were trying to get it involved because it would be the only tie that doesn't have VAR.
Right. I don't know about the VAR side of it. I'm anticipating a very tough game for the reasons Harry said. Hughton's a good manager. He knows the score. He's been around the track plenty of times, and I think he's a very underrated manager. And you know, Brighton and Chris Hughton are probably pretty good fit in that way. I think it's going to be a much tougher game than the Everton game. And also, it's going to be our second string slightly because we won't be able to field the team that took the pitch last night at St Andrews. So, I mean, we did immensely well against Everton, didn't we? So, if we can touch 90%, 80% of that performance, we'll have a chance. The Den will be in a much better frame of mind after that win last night. So, that's got to play its part, we hope. It's also played to a finish, I think, on Sunday. Isn't it? Extra time, then penalties, I guess. So,
yeah, that's right.
No replays involved, so it's now or never. I think we've got every chance. The Den factor is a very real thing, and you really don't get that very often in the modern game. And I think it'll play a big role in it. So I'm hopeful.
If we were to get through, who would you want? That's a big question.
Well, if we get through to the semi-final, I would want the easiest route to get to the final we could possibly have, because I'm guessing, I'm trying to think of the other teams in it. Is it United are in it still? City, are they?
Yep. By far, yep.
I mean, Palace or somebody like that would be great. But I think we might struggle against any of the Premier League sides. So I'd like another Sunderland-style semi-final, because to make a cup final is one of those things. It wouldn't be quite once in a lifetime, but you've got to grab it whilst you can at Millwall. So if we could get somebody that would be, would have half a chance of winning against, that would be my choice. I can't think of who else is in it. What for?
Yeah, I think the thing is as well is that I know obviously when you get to cup competitions, you know, that tends to be obviously, or the later stages, should I say, that tends to be sort of the business end. And you, with us and Swansea, you get the one or two surprises. You know, if you've got sort of Watford fans who are kind of sort of content with mid-table Premier League or, you know, Premier League survival, and they're actually saying, do you know what, we've got a chance of winning the cup. Who do you want?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I'd go for the easier route, but I mean, there's arguments both ways.
It's not legally binding.
It's going on there, his face. Someone's back in the radiation cell again.
It's tea time, so you have random shouting women at you to tell you that
tea time.
Tell you that they're evil.
I think I just want to avoid it.
There's the kettle.
I thought we'll bring it to a close, chaps.
That's them telling you the radiation has leaked out the container, and Ian Holloway's monsters are running loose. Yeah, I'd like to go to the final and play Manchester United and somehow stop Ole Gunnar Solskjaer getting the job. Like, imagine they've got the Champions League final like 3 days later, and they play like a bunch of kids, and Tunnicliffe scores against his former club, and then I have to somehow go on with the rest of my life knowing that the greatest moment of supporting my club will be forever tainted by having fucking Ryan Tunnicliffe score the winner. A man that I coated for 2 years just to have a load of people in my block turn around and call me a cunt for the remainder of the time. So, that would be very Millwall.
I'll settle for Manchester United in a final. That's a good call, actually. Round two. 2004 round two. Let's have another go.
Funny enough, I saw Robbie Ryan in a paper. Anyone see Robbie Ryan's article?
Comes up every time we get into any kind of cup situation, doesn't he?
He fucking lays track at like 3 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, 3 a.m. in the morning, the poor fucker. Yeah, I mean, his career was ruined by Dennis Wise trying to sign Graham Lassow.
That was his last appearance for Millwall, was a cup final.
Where's the rumour in there that apparently, wasn't it, because he went to Bristol Rovers after Millwall, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bristol Rovers. Wouldn't there be some rumour that the manager, Bristol Rovers' son, was playing Championship manager?
And that's because true,
it's
like, yeah.
Up
he's
to date with the stats,
it.
Wasn't it? He was like, yeah, my contract's got 6 months left. Because
so
the
they offered him
told
one.
Me.
His last opponent was Cristiano Ronaldo before he left the Den. That's quite a sentence to be able to say about yourself, isn't it?
Say that you got beaten by the all-time leading European goal scorer, fucking before you went to like train tracks. It ruined your mind so badly. Cristiano Ronaldo should give him some kind of like payment. He's got enough money, you know, before he gets banged up for legal reasons.
He should give him that bust of his head. Maybe we should give.
I think Millwall should have a statue outside the Den, but it should be just of Millwall nutcases. So it should be like Kevin Muscat, Alex Ray, Dennis Wise, Terry Urlock should all just have like a glass. It should be in like bronze or like something or just like steel, like proper like just the non-statue material should just be outside the. Instead of the blue lion that Andy Ambler put on top of the stand once. You remember the blue lion?
Yes, I do. Yeah, that disappeared, didn't it? Yeah.
The blue lion?
Yeah, we had a plastic blue lion on top of the, I think it's like the groundsman's hut over on the far side of the stadium, isn't it? And they put a blue lion up there and it was felt to be bad luck because we didn't win for some time.
About 6 years.
Like a plastic blue lion put up there and it had to be removed. And then, lo and behold, you know, form returned and we went on a 17-game unbeaten run and then he made the Premier League.
To be fair, that was that's a bit like trying to wear this 25-year Den kit. You know, it looks nothing like the Den kit. I think they were trying to get the old lion on the roof and they failed with making it link up, a bit like the club shop. Anyway, Michael, club shop update.
Club shop update. Let's finish it off with a club shop update.
So what have we got? What have we got this week? So how much would you pay for a Toblerone, James?
Oh.
About £7, something like that, isn't it?
It depends where you are. If you're in an airport or something, you're paying like a five or something like that. But you go down the Woolworth Road pound shop. You know the luxury shopping parade down the Woolworth Road, yeah?
The unique Mill Toblerone that's still got the bear on the side of the mountain, but this time says Mill FC, is yours for a tenner.
A tenner?
And what kind of saving is that?
I think you could probably tell none. So,
Aaron, you haven't done the thing. Go on. Aaron, what?
Ahmad?
Yeah, that's it.
That makes the Heathrow duty free shop look like a cheap outlet, doesn't it?
Duty free is cheap.
My personal favourite is the Harrods. What has anyone ever bought anything from Harrods duty free? Why would anyone buy like the Harrods outlet store at Gatwick? Must be the loneliest job in the world. Something like Alan Partridge would have made up in his brain. Let's have a Harrods store and an outlet. Not actually go to Harrods. We'll have all the Harrods products at their prices, miles from Harrods.
Maybe we should sub the club shop out of Harrods in that case.
I think the Harrods at the Den.
No, but that's the thing. That's the thing.
The Harrods range.
Harrods is at like Gatwick or Heathrow. Mills Club Shop will be on the Woolwich Ferry.
So £10 of Toblerone. £10 of bloody hell.
£10 of Toblerone. Well, I'll tell you what as well, though, gents. If we manage to stay up this season, what I may do is get us the three-pack crest, a pair of socks each, as a present for coming through the season with me. Guess how much for three-pack of socks?
If I was looking for a three-pack of socks, I'd go to the Elephant Castle, the interior. There's little stalls there that sell socks.
Mate, Mr. Hart.
I'd go to a TK Maxx.
I wouldn't want to part with one
of all quid. Of you, why? Why would you go to the Elephant and Castle and TK Maxx when you can get a pair of socks for £12?
£12.
By any chance, do they have a really, really badly felt sewn on or ironed on felt lion, like the famous 1995 Essex kit, Captain Morgan one that used to come off?
They do. So basically, if you're a hungry, they do. If you're a hungry chocoholic with cold feet, it's going to be an expensive day at the Den.
I was going to say, young Mickey, what are these? Three ply cashmere or something like that? What kind of material are we looking at?
Well, to be fair, it
does look like polyester, like the tie. Yes. But if I could just end this week's club shop update with the titled pennants, flags, and banners section. So that's pennants, flags, and banners.
I like a good pennant.
You might like a pennant, you might like a banner, but there's only two flags on that page.
Oh, there you go. There you go. What a
special. So for
a 5 foot by a 3 foot flag for £12.
Okay, that's not bad.
That's not bad. What's it look like?
It's blue. no surprise there. And you know the classic flags that you put on your window in your car that when you drive more than 10 miles an hour the flag blows off?
Yeah.
£2 for one of them. So there we are.
They're getting ready for another Wembley trip. I mean
when we
drove up to the Millennium Stadium, the amount of flags you saw by the side of the Severn Bridge on the way back was quite astronomical, to be fair. And also the service stations on the way home after the game.
Lee Delamere.
They were quite a sight for my 14-year-old eyes, I must admit.
I'll tell you what, gents, if they can sort out a deal where you can get a pair of socks with every flag, I'm going.
I think that's
the hooter. That's the score prediction hooter.
Yeah, we don't even need the soundboard this week, lads.
No, we don't. We don't, mate.
Yeah, quick.
There's been more laughter in this edition of the 9 o'clock Mill, the real Mill fan show.
The real Mill fan show.
That goes out every Friday night at 9, where it used to be. then what you had in an entire hour of tedious nonsense from them traitorous bastards. not saying anything else, to sit on the fence. So why do you follow me on Twitter? I'd like to point this out. I'm not your friend, all right? I'm making this clear now. I'm not your friend. I'm not your friend. I'm Aaron's friend. I'm not your friend.
Score predictions.
Vote for me.
Barry, Millwall versus Brighton.
1-0 Millwall. Ben Thompson can't play, so I'm going to say 1-0 Millwall, and it's going to be a goal from the Silver Fox himself, Steve Morrison, against his former manager.
Michael.
I'm going to go 1-0. Extra time, we win on penalties.
Aaron.
Fucking hell, what drugs are you on? Millwall win a penalty shootout.
I'm picking up some of that radiation that's affecting you as well, mate.
It's coming down the line.
Score prediction, Aaron.
Millwall 3, Brighton and Hove Albion 2.
Ooh, I like that. That's the old
football. And Ben Thompson to score. I in my safe bet with who's our betting sponsor?
Do we have this show? We haven't got one, mate. We're betting on this channel.
Well, if any betting company wants to contact me at Block 45 Lion, we can
sponsor Harry.
Hook him up.
Fucking hell, I've been sponsoring them at Cheltenham this week. Don't worry about that.
With our betting sponsor is Millwall to win and Ben Thompson to score.
I'm going to go Millwall 1, Brighton 0. Aidan O'Brien to get
a cheeky
winner off the bench. Well, that's the real Millwall fan show, dear listeners.
Been a lot of fun.
I want to know how that radiation treatment's going for that poor man.
Mate, imagine listening to that for 8 hours a day.
Harry's undisclosed location. Big thank you, Aaron Paul, for expert hosting.
Thank you very much for having me.
Big thank you to Michael Avery for the club shop update and all of the input from Michael.
More deals next week.
Big thank you, Harry Warren.
There's a distinct lack of darts playing women in your life, Michael, at the moment, by the sounds of it.
And Harry's lead-lined cell, wherever he's located.
It's all right. I've got a meeting with Kim Jong-il and Donald Trump in the morning, so we'll try and get Millwall some transfer funds.
And that's the Millwall news this week, dear listeners. Arrivederci, Millwall.
Bye for now.